Spirits work. You're a doorway to other dimensions. You're a key to life, universe, and everything. So settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Mick and Zoe Avery.
Welcome to Spirits Work, the metaphysical and spiritual show designed to open your eyes to the greater possibilities of life. And thanks for joining us. For those of you who are with us for the first time, what makes this show so unique is that every week, Nick, my husband, demonstrates his exceptional gift of deep trance channeling live on air. He channels an enlightened spirit called Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for a group of evolved spirits called the White Cloud Group. They're an educational group and are here to give us knowledge and information we'd never have access to in any other way. And this week's show is about the reactive mind and your health. So if you'd like to participate and call with a question or comment, it's toll free. It's not a reading, but it's actually to do with the subject that we're talking about. So it's toll free in the US, it's 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery, as well as Spirits Work on bbsradio.com. Every Monday at 7 p.m. we have another radio show, which is called Spirit Teaching. You can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you'd like to know more about us, our books, CDs, maybe book an Akashic reading, please go visit our websites, which are www.spirit-teaching.com and also live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. Now, as Sylvie said, I'm a deep trance medium, which means I am a pure channel for the spirit world, enabling clear, concise communication from those who continue to walk with us and who try to look after us. In this way, each week on our show, Sylvie has a conversation with our spirit friends, so that they can give us the benefit of their wisdom, and as a result, we can get a different perspective on life, which, of course, is going to mean us having choices and options we never realized maybe were available to us. When I go into the trance state, I'm not going to know about anything that happens until they bring me back again after the show, and that is how it should be, because we wouldn't want any of my own thoughts and feelings from my own mind getting in the way of the contact. Bye for now. That's it for me. Bye.
On a roll there, Mick.
Yes.
Gregory was asked before his physical life in the early 1700s if he would like to train to be the representative of this educational group. And they were going to be helping the people of the earth discover a more harmonious way of life. Basically, they consist of eminent scientists, physicists and scholars, as well as ordinary people. And between them, they have vast knowledge and insight. They try to help us to look at the bigger picture of life, to think outside of the box and explain situations that affect us and our future and the future of the planet. And of course, this means those who wish to come after us who haven't had a physical life yet. I'd like to thank Luann for her questions that we're going to be using on tonight's show. So we thank you very much for that. And that leads me to mention, actually, if there's anybody else who has a suggestion for a show topic that they would like us to cover one week on Spirit's Work, then just email us at enq@spirit-teaching.com. And if you've got questions to go with it, well, all good and well. That's just great. Then it will probably come around a lot quicker if you have got questions already that you can send to me. And, if you've just got a list, that's fine, of what you would like us to do, talk about. That's great. So just send that to me and we'll do that. We do get through them gradually. We are on SecondLife.com again this Sunday in the virtual world of Second Life. And that is this Sunday, August the 3rd, and it's 1 or 2 Pacific. So do join us then. And if you'd like an Akashic reading with Gregory at any time, those wonderful Akashic readings, do get in. Have a look on our website, www.spirit-teaching.com, and drop us a line. And if you have any questions about that, I'd be more than happy to help you. Okay, well, I do believe Gregory's with us, so I hope he is.
With love and light and blessings be upon your pathway, my dear friend. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Okay, well, we did slightly touch on food a few weeks back to do with the well-being of our being, our whole being, and our senses and everything. But we thought we'd go into it in a lot more detail today, in a more overall, thorough way. So how would you like to start?
Well, my dear friends, it comes upon us once upon a time that when human beings lived perhaps a little more frugally, or perhaps not in such great numbers and diversity, it was considered that food really, I suppose in a sense, became a bit of a temple of a situation to surround oneself by. In terms of much of this, you have to look at the temperance of the connection of mind and what it is that you place around food to begin with. In ancient times, and I'm looking at times of more than 3,000 years ago, food was really, in essence, for the most part, merely a route to survival. However, of course, there were various situations, culminations of religious event and sacrifice, whereupon food actually took a very major part in the life cycle and became very ritualistic in many respects. This meant to say that more exotic ways of exhibiting food actually became a part of human activity, I suppose you could say. Much of what human beings, as we see from our side of life, and the ever-growing list of people who pass from more and more strange ergonomics, which have principles of scientific matter and chemistry, which have been able to surface quite simply because of the different blends of different states of vegetation and animal and different ways of preparing food, have in fact meant that through this experimentation and this vast insight and array of knowledge surrounding food, there has also been brought with it a rather unblessed bias toward food of certain groups that have given rise to obesity, to various forms of diabetes, and various forms of self-poisoning, in a sense. These forms of self-poisoning have not in the main been confined to strange or different fruits, perhaps, that had not been tried thousands of years previously, but have actually, for some, have actually consisted of very specific forms of food which, for one reason or another, a certain specific tribe of human beings, perhaps, have not been able to acclimatize to, purely and simply because it's not in their genetic to do that. And so you actually have people of certain groups who are genetically irresponsible if they move with the mass and eat a particular, perhaps, shall we say, of a staple diet. So that is why you would have people in one certain country who perhaps eat a certain kind of starch, or which, of course, potato usually is, and that of different white food, that of bleached rice, or particularly white rice, or refined sugar and refined salts as well. are inherently difficult for human beings to consume, and to enable this to be, in a sense, photosynthesized within the chemical structure of the physical being. Part of what is actually happening that we can see from the human value and the whole genetic which is happening at this present time is that even though there is great diversity within human beings, far more diversity in many respects to many other animal groups. That there appears to be then that there should in fact be more and more strengths being bred into this rather than more and more weaknesses. However, because if we look at one particular animal group, then shall we say, we'll say take wildebeest. And wildebeest in their hundreds of thousands drove across certain plains of Africa, the Serengeti or wherever it may well be, and that they will use these certain different food groups and the analogy of what or where to go as trod the ancient paths of many other of their ancestors in times gone by. These different situations and states are really at variance to whether the chemical structure of the earth itself is giving rise to the right form of staple diet these different beings actually eat from one generation to another. So in other words, you could see that as they graze across the plains of the Serengeti, that there are going to be certain areas where there are specific chemicals, specific chemical reactives, maybe more phosphates in one part of the land as opposed to another, which may be actually dry of them. And that you actually find then that the plants that they eat differently bring about the constituent of the chemicals that they live upon in the soil structure, and then that in turn is passed on to the chemical value of the beast itself. This doesn't make it at odds with itself, quite simply because they're usually they have a very strong constitution, so they're able to move between different swings of chemical reactives, quite simply because their genetic is immensely strong. There are just simply so many of them. Now, you would think then that this, in terms of the human genome and how human beings are able to interact with their environment, should be similar, being that there are so many billion of you, that it would appear to be, surely, that the human principle should be far stronger than it actually is. Part of the problem, however, appears to be that human beings are resting themselves upon one specific type of food. This is where the problem lies. It isn't that it's subject to perhaps an increase of occasional increase, which maybe happens over a period of, shall we say, a month cycle, or maybe even just a few weeks, and then the food group is returned to some other constitute of chemical reaction, which then creates a different diversity in a different way. When you are looking at the human being, you have to look at this purely as a chemical formula, and because human beings in physical life, that's what you're doing. You're a chemical reactive state, which is moving from one day to another, from one place to another, as you eat your way across the land.
Okay.
A fascinating thought, really.
Well, yes, it is. So, basically, okay, let's start going through these questions.
Very well.
Okay. So basically, we want to know how much do we need to eat to be healthy and what we need to eat. But I want to actually go through some of these questions of Luann's and see what you say. Obviously, we can't talk about brand names or anything like that. But, okay, let's say. The difference, okay, about organic. What about organic? I know, Ben, I think everybody knows the process. Food isn't that good for you, but it doesn't seem to stop a lot of people doing that. So really, how important is eating organic, and even organic is said to be toxic as well in,
yes,
in some, you do know what I mean? So
absolutely.
If we can talk about organic and processed foods.
Yes, well, first of all, my dear friend, it was in fact to the situation of what a person really wants to take within themselves. The whole situation, of course, was developed originally by Rudolf Steiner, who brought about organics and organic compounds as a familiarity of specific food groups. And it was simply brought about by him because he understood that in his rationale of trying to be of service to humanity, that perhaps it would be that it would be better for human beings in their constitution to be more reliant upon things which were free from the direction that he could see certain other beings trying to force humanity into. This was specifically aimed at different food groups so that they would be of the greatest and most beautiful benefits to the human society.
And that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes.
We're talking about, you know, spiritually, what really, I mean, and health-wise, of course, but spiritually, holistically, you know, what should we be eating? So this is really a classic situation, actually, because that is exactly the way his mind worked, in
yes.
a holistic way.
Oh, absolutely so. It's why he treated everything like a temple.
Mm.
That's the point. And that he saw, quite simply, that the relationship of the ergonomics of the physical being to that of the spirit, of trying to make it the most beautiful place it could be, so that the spirit really wanted to have that journey, rather than being forlornly imprisoned in a physical being that really didn't want to be there.
I mean, processed foods are actually quite addictive, aren't they?
Extremely addictive, yes.
You know, what's in it, really.
Yes, usually because they are using specific processes which have been designed to be addictive, let's face it.
Mm.
And that's the truth of it, that many of the materials based within certain products, the various compounds, are of a very addictive nature. They release certain chemical and pheromonic activity, which means that the cataclysm of collision that's happening in your physical brain, purely and simply because you've eaten a certain food, exists purely as a way of trying to make you eat and buy more of it.
Mm.
And the whole process is actually really quite unnatural, I have to say. Now, you might have a person, you might have a being in physical life which takes a very philosophical approach, perhaps a wild animal, and it brings down a kill. Shall we say? No, it doesn't want to do that. It doesn't actually know any different because it's an instinctive state behavior which is initiated by its desire to continue life. That means it's driven purely by hunger to do the things it does. So when you are looking at its consumption of the animal, it is not going to be that it's going to worry about what the animal has eaten, because it's doing something in a completely holistic way. I know that one might say, well, it's not consciously thinking about it. How do you know? In actual fact, animals are very much aware of the different conditions around them. I understand that perhaps for big cats, shall we say, in Africa at this present time, undergoing extreme poisonings, that you could say that they are not actually aware of their environment then. But that's simply because they're using different chemicals which are outside of that animal's compound or genetic ancestry. So it means to say they are not familiar with them.
Okay.
So now you look at one condition, at one situation in human physical life that is perhaps the way that they would want to use behavior as well as a certain specific food group. So it's not to say, friend, that over the centuries there had not ever been a time when there were not pies, for example. But pies, in the main, it was true. If people actually ate too many pies, then they would become larger. It's as simple as that, and it's a fact. It's just really because it's always been a collection of compounds which have exacerbated the physical state, and that this then in turn with eating certain, it's not really even eating certain animal fats, it's actually to do with the certain specific compounds found within specific groups of grain that you grind to eat. Some grains really, in a sense, should never really be eaten, except in extreme provocation, such as wheat. And yet human beings eat it by the truckload. I believe that's the expression. Okay. And they simply do that because it's become a part of the constitution, a part of your way of life. So it's as though you're also using the chemical compounds and the reaction you have within a cell to continue that state. Now, you may even find that the environment of you eating it is something which is actually conjoined with your memory of eating it. Do you see? So that it's the actual organic thing of you putting the pie in your mouth that's actually part of the memory, the consciousness memory of the reactive mind that plays a part in it, which is linked to specific chemical desires of the tranquil state that once you've eaten it, it puts upon you.
Yes, well, there's the blood sugar situation, yes, as well, isn't there?
Absolutely. So really, you see, what I'm trying to say, friend, is it's a very complex nature.
Mm. Yes, so I think we all agree that the whole grain situation is better than white flour, isn't it? So
Yes, I'm not really meaning to stray from the point. I'm just really saying here that a being in the wild will not think about what the animal it has just chased down has eaten in its physical life, because it will be immaterial in a sense. However, it is that through its nature and its understanding of its ancestry, it will just simply do what it does. It, in effect, if you could, in fact, infect a whole area with poison and wipe out many, many different species purely and simply because they do not track with specific kinds of chemical reaction and wouldn't even see it coming.
Yes, well, we expect the people that manufacture goods to do that for us, but obviously...
that's true.
But shopping in a health food department store is not actually... you can't do that all of the time. A, that they're not all over the place readily, and B, they're usually more expensive to shop in as well.
Yes, and I'm well aware that for Rudolf Steiner, in his precept of what he thought was right and would bring about the continuation of the grace of humanity, if you will, that it really meant that most of what he was really angling at, what he was really most interested in, was the united state of the physical body and the spirit.
Great.
That was utmost.
Yes, which is exactly what we want to do, but we also want to know, you know, like, okay, let's go through a few different things. Okay, what about dairy food? You know, we say that it produces mucus, which also causes cellulite.
Yes.
And that sort of thing. But what's your view about dairy products?
Well, I understand, my dear friend, there are a great many experiments over this over a great amount of time through humanity, both on your side of life and in ours. In ours, through the observations that we have taken part in and that we have really, in a sense, assumed, as in trying to grapple with this whole idea of the use of dairy products. And is it really a part of the human state that should be a part of everyday life? Or, in fact, should it only be at one segment stage of physical life? If you look to many forms of experimentation over a long period of time, you would see, in fact, that during the years of the Second World War, there were times when certain countries didn't have dairy products that much. They actually had things like organic milk and various different ways of making cheese, but they didn't actually, were not able to manufacture it, to perfect it to the amount that the population desired. So it meant that, in fact, many went without. Mm. And they went without for a period of about 5 or 6 years. Now, in that time, the people, and we're not really talking about children here, or children up to a certain age were quite all right to have various products of milk and that kind of thing. But what was found was that children over, I believe it was the age of eight, children over the age of eight who actually then had a lot, consumed a lot less milk and a lot less cheese and those kinds of fats in all different kinds of food as well, in cooking and that kind of thing. Not forgetting, of course, that some forms of pastry also contain milk products and that kind of thing. And various other dishes of cooking, of cookery also does that too. And it was found, in fact, I believe that this was a situation more specifically which happened in Holland, which almost stopped production entirely during the Second World War years. So this, in fact, became that this whole section of society basically stopped using milk, and it was something which was given only to children under the age of eight. So it was actually found then that looking back to within that time was obviously very difficult for those people because they had to make a completely emotional and diametric change within their behavior. It meant that they had to withdraw, really, from the fats and those kinds of animal products that they had consumed. It also meant that, realistically, that it was a chance for many, both on your side of life and ours, to actually look at the long-term effects of what this was going to create. And it was actually found that those who went through this state were much less likely to contract various forms of cancer which would then become hostile to the physical body than it for those who would normally have consumed large amounts of dairy products, whereas those in those particular years actually were found to not contract that kind of variance of cell structure.
Wow. Why isn't that more commonly known then? And why isn't
because
that?
It's suppressed.
Right, okay. Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to get at or be antagonistic toward one industry or another. However, facts are facts. And when you look at the whole situation of what you want to understand about the food that you eat, I'm not saying that dairy products are something that you should not consume.
No.
But if you look at it in en masse, you will see that much of the obesity and the states of physical state that you have that are part of this situation of culture, you would agree, perhaps, then, that the rationale of the ratio between how much, exactly how much of this product that you eat would, in fact, become that you understand that it's actually not doing you that much good. It's certainly, friend, if you look to you look to the Indian subcontinent, you will see that for some tribal groups, that they depend very heavily upon the substantial mix of dairy product and that kind of thing, whereas others will actually eat a lot more vegetables, perhaps, and not use dairy product at all in their diet.
Or depending on the availability of whatever it is of that area.
Well, yes, and also, but also it's actually to do with their own specific reality and understanding of what those products will do to you. And for some, maybe, it might even be brought into their own religious understanding that Sikhs, for example, don't eat dairy products. And that is simply because they are simply not good for you, and they recognize that fact.
Okay, what about the soy?
Soy.
Because obviously if you don't drink, you don't want to use so much milk, and we're not saying to anybody, you know, not to be eating any of this stuff, but to use soy.
Yes, or rice milk.
Yes, or rice milk. Okay, can you talk about that?
Well, rice milk, I understand. Now, I don't have something, a situational condition against rice at all. After all, it's the staple diet of a third of the world. And the situation is, of course, that rice is very much dependent upon the ergonomics of the state of the environment. It's very much to do with the environment. Rice inherently needs quite a difficult environment in which to grow. So it does mean to say that for the various carbohydrates which are released within it and held within it, it is most certainly that certain forms of rice are much better for you than others. Organic brown rice, for example, are much, much better for you than white rice. And it's not simply because white rice is bleached by the sun. It's actually to do with the fact that it depends upon its own chemical nature and its own specific balance within itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we are faced then with one product over another. Soy, I understand, has many specific nutrients within it which are supposed to be quite a balanced way of you enhancing your life. And I understand that it may well be that soy is perhaps another route if you have to go along the collection of mind that you have, that you need to have milk in this or that drink in order for it to be palatable.
Well, absolutely. I think more, though, that it's the cooking, the catering side of it.
Yes, I understand that.
Yeah.
And I do have to say that there is also here a balanced judgment really surrounding whether you are using something which is which has been biochemically enhanced. Now, biochemical enhancement is for what purpose? Is it for the production of food or to enhance it with specific ingredients so that it will grow better? Or to enhance it with specific ingredients so that other creatures won't want to eat it. This is simply rubbish, of course, because the creatures continue to eat it. What people have to understand is the whole point of genetics and the way in which biodiversity has been controlled in the main by specific industries is really aimed at selling their products. And their products happen to be various different poisons to eradicate the growth of weeds and other plants that they don't want to share their field with. So they don't want the plant itself, whether it be soy or whether it be some other grain, it's growing there in a field and they don't want certain other plants to be a part of it. So it will have imprinted within its genetic a fundamental shift in chemical balance. That is that it's actually had an additive which will mean that the plant itself will not succumb to a certain kind of weed extermination chemical to enable that plant to survive its threat. And it will, in fact, throw up a coat around the plant itself that will then shield it from the chemical you are about to spray upon it. This, of course, is still inherent within the specific plant when you've harvested it.
And presumably different countries use different things and different methods and techniques, some better than others and that sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely so. So when you are really looking about biodiversity, in itself, soy, I understand, is a very good protein. It really is a very, very good protein. Eaten in the right quantity, it can do you no harm. However, eaten in excess, taken in excess, and certainly with the various different coatings of chemical, which many have now profited from, it means to say that you are consuming a whole range of chemicals you shouldn't actually be in contact with. And that the studies of physical beings have simply been played out, that even when studies were not even known that they were being carried out, as within the eastern part of the United States of America, for example, when I understand 10 or was it 15 million people were actually subject to a large experiment, field experiment, where they were given, in fact, enhanced chemical production of specific food groups that were actually laced with these various different insecticides because they wanted to find out actually what happened to them.
Okay, well, all right.
So this, I understand, is maybe one might say, well, surely that's veering off the food group situation. No, it isn't, because what you have to understand is that the different forms of food that you eat in physical life, if they're not grown organically in their natural state environment, and that instead they are treated with various chemicals, you are looking at a whole different situation because it's a raft of chemicals you shouldn't actually be consuming.
Yes, well, you can go on and on at that, can't you? Because then the animals that you eat have been injected with things as well, that, you know, antibiotics and steroids and all sorts of things, and then we eat them. And that's something else. Okay, what about... okay, so we know about salt, don't we, that a lot of salt is bad for you.
Yes, in actual fact, 2.9% of the salt intake, really, even on a really good day when you really need a lot of salt, is really about the maximum you should be having at any time.
9%
of your whole total food intake
right.
for one day.
Okay, that's difficult to work out.
Well, if you look at the balance of how many pounds of food are you going to consume in a day?
Well, it depends who you are. I mean, that's one of the other questions. How much should you eat a day? I mean, obviously, we're talking about different sizes of frame and that sort of thing.
Human
male
beings.
Male and female, but...
Yes, but actually human beings tend to eat too much. It's really about consumption rate. And you really, as a physical being, it is, for example, if you look at most animals in the wild, they will consume at a specific rate, and they are always, you very rarely see an obese lion,
mm-hmm.
or even, for that matter, an obese elephant. Elephants are large genetically, inherently
mm-hmm.
within them. You'll never see an obese cow either. Why is that? Quite simply, and I understand that, well, but cows eat all day. Yes, but so do horses. So does every being which lives, has a vegetarian diet. It doesn't mean to say that they're going to get fat upon it. It's the kind of food group that you eat
And also, surely, when you eat and that sort of thing, is it best to have?
Oh, absolutely.
Is it best to have discipline and eat at certain times every day, or is it best to only eat when hungry?
You should, in actual fact, not eat a very large meal after the time of. Well, it depends, of course, on when you are going to settle for the night. You certainly should not really eat something, shall we say, within 3 hours of you going to bed.
Right.
Although I understand, for some people, they actually have to lie down once they've eaten.
And I
understand that.
And other people can't lie down.
And other people cannot, but that's because of a certain chemical metabolic rate and the fact that for some people, they need to burn off the sugars that they've eaten. That's the point, really. And if you were looking at a person being in the wild, you would see that, in the main, what they tend to do is that after having consumed a lot, for example, this generally tends to happen with creatures that eat meat, that they consume a lot of food and then they have to lie down. But also, of course, cows, when they first get up in the morning, they consume a lot of food for about 2.5 hours. They eat and eat and eat and eat and don't stop. And then suddenly they'll stop and they'll all lie down. And they'll all lie down all at once.
But that was when it was going to rain, Gregory. How do you tell if it's going to rain? The cows are all laying down in the field. I never did quite understand that. I've never seen it yet, but there you go.
Yes.
I'd believe anything when I was little.
It's so sweet, really. No, but the point is, you see, that the situation then is that, so you have all of these animals which are lying down after they've had a consumption of food. That is actually quite natural. In a sense, it's allowing the digestion process to take place in a quiet environment. That's why you've lied down. And for others, however, it may well be that the chemical reactives and the sugars inherent within the food just digested really need to be able to work within the blood supply. It depends specifically, really, on the constitution of that actual physical being as to how that process works. And for some, they will need to lie down in order to let the process work, and for others, they will need to burn it off. Now, it may well be that, for example, as a child, you may well have had 3 good meals in a day. And that was inherent for many children. However, it's the type of food that you eat yourself. That perhaps for children who do not eat enough vegetables, they will become more prone to the fats and the trans fats that they consume through other means, as these actually become in excess and simply they're placed around the body because there's nowhere else for it to go. If you don't burn them up by exercise or you do not consume the chemical reactive state that enables you to burn the food that you have just eaten, if it's not burnable, then it's just going to lie there.
Mm.
It's as simple as that, and it's got to go somewhere. So usually it's passed out through the membrane of parts of the digestive system, maybe even through the various states of the blood supply. The salts are certainly passed in that way, or may actually become congealed around various specific prime organs.
Okay. There are these high-protein diets, aren't there? What about high proteins?
Yes, well, diets are... What are diets? Diets are really just a recipe, a menu, if you like. You're setting out a menu for how you think you are going to be reactive to your life. So it's not to say that one menu is better than another, apart from, of course, if you have brought about many different food groups within it. Yes.
Hello, caller. Who's speaking?
Hi, this is Luann. How are you?
Oh, hi, Luann. Thank you for your question. We're going to have another one.
Hello, my dear friend. Yes, yes, yes.
Hello,
of course.
Gregory.
Hello, friend. Hello.
Thanks for helping us with that. My question is that, what's your thoughts on microwave
a very interesting point, my friend. Do you mean
like
the machine
the fast food
itself,
and everything?
Yes, yes. Well,
everything is packaged, and you're just throwing the microwave. It's ready in 30 seconds. So.
Yes, so I understand. Yes, I have seen these pieces of machinery in operation, and one of the things that we have noticed is that, in actual fact, inherently, within the more up-to-date machines, as they have been made in a different way, that they actually enable various different foods to be actually cooked from within, which is kind of strange in a sense, because it's not really the natural way one might think of cooking something. Now, if you had actually buried the food in the ground and made a natural clay oven, you would actually find that the heat generated within it would be very specific, and it would actually, in a sense, cook it from the middle outwards. This is in exactly the same situation that you have in the microwave food. You actually find that it's because of the fact that the different cells are being vibrated that enable the situation of the food to go about this complete change and in being cooked. As to whether these waves actually, these situations actually release other forms of chemical which will then either enhance or bring detriment to the food itself, is a matter, I understand, that for many people, it's perhaps even a better way than cooking with water, quite simply with boiling water, that many would say, well, actually most of the ingredients of the food that you're trying to cook to eat actually ends up in the water, which is perfectly true. That's why it should be that most vegetables that you cook, if you are going to boil them or anything like that, you should really do them only very, very quickly and, in a sense, eat them when they are still quite hard, really. Most people tend to cook products far in excess so that you don't actually benefit from the ingredients and natural chemical structure that's inherent within them. I think part of the problem, Luan, within most of the food groups which are used in cooking and in that kind of way of cooking with a microwave is simply because they are collections of chemicals which are then usually brought together and appear to work very well in that kind of environment. The problem, however, is that the chemicals inherent within those kinds of foods, like processed foods, mass-produced foods in that respect, which are like a chemist shopping list, it will be that it's usually because of those inherent chemicals that the food is actually bad for you, not in the process of cooking it. However, if you are looking at some bad way or some inefficient way of cooking food, I would say that boiling it in water is probably far worse than putting, shall we say, vegetables in a microwave.
Interesting. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you, Luan.
Thank you so, friend. Thank you so. Yes, God bless.
Yes.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. I mean, even they talk about the actual microwaves itself. They used to talk about, well, don't stand in front of it, or when it's getting old, don't stand in front of it, or else it'll cook your kidneys or something. You know what I mean? I mean, there's all sorts of things that scary about microwaves.
Yes,
on the other hand,
yes,
I know
and
people,
I wasn't really talking about the radiation effects, or which are coming from the energy by diversity being
air.
Used into the air.
Yeah, but what about the radiation in the actual food? Does that go into the food?
Not specifically.
No. Okay. Because they say that you're supposed to leave it for a few seconds or however long before you actually eat it when it's come out of the microwave. A minute.
Yes.
Right. So it must. So it does affect it to a certain degree. But there are also schools of thought, and I know particularly a couple who are totally health conscious. I mean, more so than anyone else I know. And they don't. They only cook in a microwave. They've got two microwaves, and I know you can use it as an oven as well.
Yes.
These days you can bake in it and that sort of thing.
Yes,
so
yes,
they don't,
absolutely.
You know, you don't. But and they swear by this microwave.
Yes,
method
absolutely.
Of eating all of the time.
Yes, quite so. I understand that. And in actual fact, as I'm saying, it's actually an extremely efficient way of using energy. However, I would say that perhaps also a very efficient way of using energy is to bake products in the ground. That's a very efficient way of using energy too.
Absolutely, but I can't see that happening, and not unless you were on holiday or something.
Well, no, I am aware of that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, to save my dear friend, it's part of the reason why if you bake a potato and you place it in the ground and bake it, it will taste completely different to one which is boiled.
I'm sure it would be good for everybody to know how to do this sort of cooking.
Yes, absolutely so. And so using a crock is a far better way as well. Also, of course, I was not actually suggesting in that situation that adding water into the method of cooking is in any way bad for the situation if you, in fact, end up in consuming the water. But most people throw it away. That's my point, really. So if you're going to boil something, keep the water that you've used, that you've boiled it in.
Yes, quite.
And use that as a soup or as a part of some other kind of sauce that you're actually going to end up in using on top of it.
Yes.
Because that's actually got all of the ingredients. Not, of course, that they will still be there and in at their most active state if you have boiled it incessantly for too long a time.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're going to continue this next week because
there is so much that we haven't even talked about. We haven't even talked about the reactive mind to do with these various different chemical groups and food groups that we need to look upon.
Yes.
Because this is actually part of the emotional attraction and the way that human beings are, in a sense, enslaved by different food groups.
Yes. So spiritually, we want to know the sort of food that we should be eating to enhance our pathway and our health.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, in a combined way. Vitamins, minerals, should we, shouldn't we, all of that sort of thing. There's lots of different things. And exercise as well.
Yes, well, I believe that there are also many, many questions we still have not covered that Luann had
absolutely
asked
of. Yep. And I'm sure we'll get some more. Hey, Luann. And thank you so much for your call, Luann. Anyway, all right. Okay, I'm Gregory.
Thank you, Sue. With love and light, God bless upon your journeys, my dear friend. Sleep tight, eat well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd just like to mention our website again, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us, or maybe book yourself an Akashic reading from Gregory. Okay, until next time, be peaceful, be positive and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.